Everybody, welcome to a Tuesday Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour. Sam Morey alongside. We'll take you to three. Hand it off to our good friend Phil Bonatti, who is live and direct from Radio Row in the Bay Area as we get ready for Super Bowl 60 at Levi's Stadium. And we'll have the exclusive radio coverage for you from Westwood One. And Phil will be up in the Bay Area all week long with great guests and everything else. So stay tuned for that. Today, 90 minutes for Phil, and then it's time for the, how do I phrase this? It's more than just a flag, a 7-on-7 flag football game. It is the Pro Bowl games. They have different skill events, whatever. You guys have seen it before, and I don't know that it's taking off the way they wanted it to, but you can't really play the Pro Bowl in the bye week. They tried. That didn't work. Nobody wants to get beat up before the Super Bowl, particularly if you're not playing in the Super Bowl and you want to go to parties all week. All the years they had it in Hawaii, it was great for players to take the vacation, but nobody took the game seriously, except for Kevin Gogan, who actually got thrown out one time. But I think Kevin Gogan got thrown out when he was with the 49ers so he could get to an early dinner date in the islands. So anyway, we'll see how it plays out tonight. It'll be a 4:30 start for that. The Lakers are over on 790. I'll tell you all about the schedule for tonight and for the rest of the week a little bit later on, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering, Planning, Land Surveying, Civil Engineering, Landscape Architecture, Construction Management, all there under one roof, 449-4500 or precisieneng.net for more information. When we go over the schedule, I'll tell you again about all the great fundraising Ed does for his alma mater, Fresno State, through the Lyles College of Engineering there on campus. Jackson with me, as always, on a Tuesday. A lot to talk about. Robert, I have your email about the Mountain West deal. I'll try to address that. We'll certainly talk about Fresno State, UNLV, coming up tonight. We're now getting to the point where you've got the second meeting in conference during the year, so you have a direct comparison from the first meeting, which was the 84-72 UNLV win at the Thomas and Mack to start conference year for Fresno State. So we'll get to basketball, also to football tomorrow. For many years was the most anticipated day of all, which was signing day, but that has, of course, been usurped by early signing day, by NIL, by transfer portal, by a whole bunch of stuff. But we will go over football as well with Jackson. So a lot to do before we get there. However, our great friends at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing want to do what they do every day. Allow me the time to tell you about the weather. Lee's been in the Central Valley since 1981. See the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. I've had them in to do work even during COVID. Really professional people, very timely, very competitive pricing, and just terrific people to be around. So if you have any need at all, Central Air Plumbing, Heating, or Roofing, give them a call, 825-5337, which is 825-LEES, or look them up on the web at leesair.com. They also sponsor the Lee's Air Hotline. Jackson is waiting on that hotline right now to come up. It's also the hotline for the general public during Phil's show. So mark it down, 559-320-1430. That is the Lee's Air hotline. As far as the forecast goes, same old right now. Dense fog in the morning, another advisory till noon, that just passed a couple hours ago. 63, though, in the afternoon today, a little hazy. I think you guys know how it works by now. If the sun breaks through completely, we're going to be close to 70. If somehow this time of year the sun doesn't show itself in the afternoon, we're in the 50s right now with the sun coming up to not full song, but at least where we're not worrying about it being overcast all afternoon. It's pretty solid. After the 63 today and the lows in the mid-40s, and watch out for the fog, 64 tomorrow, 66 on both Thursday and Friday, and then a pair of 67s on Saturday and Sunday. And then the first chance for rain in a good long while looks like it'll take place Monday and Tuesday as we fall to 64 and 63 in the temps. We'll see again how that models out and how that verifies. You know, the people that do it for a living know what they're talking about. I, however, am just along for the ride, just passing on to you. Maybe Monday and Tuesday, and maybe an opportunity for more snow. We need more moisture because it was a very, very dry, you know, it was dry January for people in one respect. It was definitely a dry January for us weather-wise. And if we have a dry February, we're going to have a very long, difficult spring and summer in this town and the valley as a whole. So hopefully we're going to get a little bit more rain. We'll see how it plays out. Anyway, thanks everybody at Lee's for allowing us the time again. Lee'sAir.com, 825-533-7, 825-Lee's. That having been said, on the Lee's Air Hotline, it is our de facto co-host, the master of disaster, the king of all he surveys, it is Sir Jackson Moore, MrBarkBoard.com, or as we like to call him, Bark Boy. Bark Boy, how are you?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Your Grizzlies are hacking me off. I talked to Jackson before the show and his beloved Memphis Grizzlies. Why he loves the Memphis Grizzlies, I don't know. But they're making big moves to actually be good in the future. So you're irritating me, Jackson. I want you guys to just wallow in mediocrity. Is that okay?
Well, it's going to be that way for a few years, I think. Well, hopefully not after these first-round picks start cashing in.
Well, you have a choice now. You can either, take the handguns away from Ja, or you can deal him, one of the two. So I don't know how it works. I hate to interrupt his live streaming of various shootings all around the Tennessee area. Am I being unfair to your beloved Ja Morant? Is that me just being unfair, or am I being accurate? I'm just wondering.
Unfair for now. If he gets traded, then you can say whatever you want.
And that hesitancy told me all I needed to know. By the way, I keep getting so many questions about Giannis, and I want to make this clear. The trading deadline for the NBA is coming up on Thursday. That's why the movement right now, and we know that the Warriors are in the hunt. But here's the bottom line. I don't see where, unless the Warriors do, just back up the Brinks truck with four number ones plus viable players, where Milwaukee is going to make a deal between now and Thursday, when if you wait till the summer, yeah, a little bit more leverage belongs to Giannis at that point because he has only 1 year in his contract. But right now, it's really the same thing. If he tells the team, I'm not going to sign with you in the next 18 months, they're not going to want to make the deal anyway. So if I'm Milwaukee, I wait till the summer. I let Miami and the Knicks and everybody better position in the summer to bring me the best offer. And since Giannis is hurt right now, I don't worry about it fracturing the team. You're already trying to go in the tank. That's what I'd do if I'm in Milwaukee. As a Warrior fan, I'd like them to make the deal in the next 2 days. So there's the yin and the yang of it. Before we get back to Fresno State, Jackson, any comment, Mr. Basketball?
I'm still wrapping my head around the fact that my Memphis Grizzlies aren't going to give me much to watch for another year or two. So
no,
I might be sick out of basketball until they turn the corner.
You. It's all about you. I'm telling you, they're moving back to Vancouver. I told you that. And I told you, I know a guy who was supposed to have been their first play-by-play voice. That's right. You're talking to him. So I don't know if I could afford to live in Vancouver. Vancouver is a wonderful city. It's also about as expensive as San Francisco. And by the way, I love the fact that all the Eastern media, Bay Area, where it's 70 degrees right now, it's great, except Mr. Earthquake came visiting yesterday. So reminded everybody in the East why we want them to stay in the East. It's okay to come out here and visit, but we already have 40 million people. We don't need any more. Stay away for your own safety. Go home the minute the Super Bowl is over. You with me with that advice, Jackson?
Yeah, it was a good timing for the earthquake.
Yeah, there we go.
Finally, minimal.
All right. Finally, you and I agree on something. All right, let's get started. I want to address Robert's question first, then we'll get to Fresno State and UNLV and talk about what you hope to see tonight. 8 o'clock, by the way, that game was on FS1. That's the reason for the late start. And boy, with Fresno State on the men's side starting their weeknight games at 6. This is really a late start. They're starting at the time that they would normally be done, for goodness sake. We'll get to that, but Jackson had asked me about the Mountain West deal. One of the things, and you and I had talked about this last week, Jackson, Robert had asked me about it. The reality, if you're going to put your conference, well, whatever you want to call it, we used to be satellite and cable entities. Now it's mainly streaming. But your conference network, you know, the SEC has one, the ACC, etc. The Mountain West has left their network open for everybody to watch. It's exposure over dollars because, again, you have to have some sort of attractiveness in your inventory. You have to have stuff that people want to pay for. If they're not willing to pay for it, it doesn't do you any good behind to put it behind a paywall. A lot of the conferences, like the SEC, for instance, or the Big Ten, they have part of their conference network, which is through ESPN, as a basic service. And then they have a plus service, which is extra games, and it's the inventory that they know that people want to get to that aren't on the commercial network, and they want to try to make some money off of it, and they know they have the following to do that. Jackson, I brought it up with you last week. I don't see where the Mountain West is going to be able to get people to pay for their product. Okay, maybe they're inveterate fans in every market, but there aren't going to be any nationally. There's certainly not going to be a ton beyond the inveterate fan base. And I would ask you right now, in the current structure of the Mountain West, if they were behind a paywall, how many people do you think would say, you know what, I can live without that live stream? I would say a bunch. And I think it's going to be a bunch, and they're going to get bitten right where the sun doesn't shine next year by doing this. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think that's a dangerous thing as well, because then you get people that tune out and they don't follow the team as closely anymore. They're not as engaged. And from covering Hawaii, I feel like I saw a lot of that from the Rainbow Warriors, where their broadcast went to pay-per-view locally, and you saw Aloha Stadium that was once packed to the gills full of fans, especially during that 07 run. All of a sudden, by the time they had to move to the 15,000 seat stadium, there were games where that wasn't even sold out. So 10 years of alienating fans can do that to a program, especially if you're not winning. I guess if you're a Mountain West fan and your team's winning, you're probably be more likely to shove over those dollars. But if you're a middle of the pack or a lower end team in the sport of your choice, is it going to be worth paying X amount of dollars each month to watch it or not?
Well, it's a great point. I know that you, as you mentioned, you dealt with it with Hawaii, where they had Oceanic pay-per-view and then Spectrum after that, and they were wanting some 50-plus bucks a game for their football games there in the islands. Well, we were able to see them for free here, and there's no way in the world that I would have paid 50 bucks a game to watch it in the islands, okay? I just wouldn't have done it. And the other thing is, as we've talked, it's a decision. I mean, first, the Mountain West is going to do what the Mountain West does. They are hanging on by their fingernails. Gloria Navarez has done whatever she can to hang on to this. She is dealing with a very bad hand. It's kind of tough, Jackson, to win draw poker when you got a 2 and a 3 and a 7 and 9 and an 8, okay? It's kind of tough, all right? And that's sort of what she has right now. So she's doing the best she can with it. But the bottom line is the decision that they're making to possibly have everything behind the paywall is something you and I talked about in relation to the pack last week. You have to have not only extra inventory, you have to have inventory that people are interested in watching. And now look, if you're in the Big Ten, if you're any conference where you're pulling up on 20 teams, you have a bunch of games in a bunch of sports that are nationally prominent that aren't going to be on the networks, and I'm talking about in the commercial networks or the cable networks, and they're also not going to be part of your streaming package in a traditional sense. So those games can go on the plus feed, and you can make money from them because you have enough inventory, enough games, and enough different sports, and enough interest. When you only have 8 teams, Jackson, it is very difficult. As I mentioned to you about what's going on with the PAC right now, when you have 3 national entities already committed to those 8 games, what does that leave you to put out there that you'd put behind a paywall? And that's something that the PAC has to grapple with, and certainly the Mountain West, to an even greater extent, has to look at it. I think it's delusional thinking and behavior myself, but I guess we'll find out next year. What do you think the PAC is going to do with this issue next year?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't want to criticize the Mountain West paywall too much if the Pac-12 is going to do the same thing, but it's a little bit different with the exposure. The Pac-12 is going to have basically every football game on national television, and the very large majority of men's basketball. The Mountain West is not going to have that luxury. They're going to have plenty of television with their deal, but less than half of their basketball and about a quarter of the football games are still going to need to be on these streaming services. So there's a little bit more. So it's also interesting. You know, they've backfilled more teams. They're going to have more programs, especially non-football in the Mountain West. But you know, if you're only going to televise 35% of the games anyway, is that going to be worth having them around? Is it even enough quality inventory for the streaming service? I don't know. But at least for the Pac-12, it's going to be largely Olympic broadcasts. And it seems like it would be tough to paywall a lot of that as it currently stands, since it's the majority, I would think, people are watching or family members, or there's not a whole lot of general public tuning into those broadcasts online. And to milk that base for extra money is a tough one. And I think it also goes back to just the Hawaii-type subject. You know, is it worth having that extra revenue on paper if it hurts your fan base down the road? I don't know. It's easy to look at the budget and make that decision, but it's a little bit tougher to look long-term and decide if that's the right move or not.
Yeah, you're correct. And two points here, and we'll move past this. One is the separate issues. The one is the amount of available inventory, and that's what, as we're referencing, the PAC is going to have. And I'm not talking about in the quote-unquote Olympic sports. What I'm talking about in your core football and basketball. When you have that many national networks and that few amount of games, it's very difficult. So you really don't have the inventory. That's what you're going to have to face in the pack. With the Mountain West, like you're bringing up, Jackson, it may not be, you know, the inventory. It may be the interest period. I mean, if you're at the Air Force Academy, if you're in Colorado Springs, are you really going to pay to watch that team? Seriously. Now, look, we know the reason. Right. I was just talking to Paul about it yesterday. We know how a service academy has its hands tied in this current day and age. But the bottom line is your fan base. To ask them to pay so they can see the road games, like you said, which builds interest for the home games, it's a very difficult ask. And so, you know, it's great to say, well, we're going to put it behind the paywall and project all of this. But as we were talking the other day, for a while we would see the real numbers up during the postseason for the bat and ball sports, the real numbers of people watching. And it was jarring to see how few people were watching the Mountain West softball and baseball postseason tournaments. And that tells you that you just don't have the fan bases, and you're losing the best fan bases to the pack. So this is a really interesting decision if it comes to that. As far as what the pack does, I would hope that for the first year they would stay away from a paywall, but I know that the rhetoric is already there that they intend to do that. If it's going to be a paywall, it better be a very reasonable monthly fee, like $4.99 or whatever. If it's a per-game fee, that's suicide. I would certainly hope they wouldn't do that. The other thing that Robert asked about was if the PAC network, at the facilities there in San Ramon, which, by the way, the earthquake was definitely waking up everybody around San Ramon yesterday. Okay, trust me. A lot of stuff off the shelves there because that was a pretty good shaker. But that new facility, the one that was put in place before the breakup, the production there could very well be, Robert, what you're asking about. It could be games produced for the Mountain West on, say, the CW will actually be produced by the PAC itself. So the Mountain West will end up paying the PAC. That may be what happens here. So we'll see how it plays out ultimately. All right, Jackson, let's get to on the court here. These two teams, Fresno State and UNLV, again, they'll meet at 8 o'clock tonight, FS1. I hope people are out at the facility tonight if possible. I know it's a late start on a weeknight, which is never easy. But it's only 2 hours, so it's not like a football game starting late. The Rebels ran off the 16-point lead. The Bulldogs caught them in a big hurry at the start of the conference here at the Thomas and Mack. And Fresno State actually had the lead with 8 minutes to go in the game. They still had the lead after coming back from that double-digit deficit. But were really outclassed athletically at the end of the game. How do you view this one? We've talked about the games Fresno State figures to win going forward for sure, which would be the two at home now with Air Force and San Jose, and the two we figure they're going to lose at Logan and then at Phoenix against Grand Canyon, Logan, of course, against Utah State. This one of the tweener games, Jackson. Is this one where home court carries the day for Fresno State and the maturation of the Bulldogs from the start of the conference year till now? What say you?
You hope so. I don't think there's many true 50-50 games left on the schedule. Many of them, this might be probably the closest to it, maybe at Wyoming. You could put in that category. You got to at least split those if they're 50-50s. And at home on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Pacific time, it's probably not going to be the same atmosphere we've seen for the last couple of Saturday games. But just not being on the road is a good thing. Obviously, at UNLV was a tough one for the Bulldogs, and the Rebels don't have a great crowd. It's just sometimes it's being comfortable and at home and not having to travel. Also, looking back at that game, it's kind of hard to recognize some of the numbers in there where Wilson Jacks was just on a tear. We haven't quite seen as much of that from him lately. He had 18 points and 11 boards in that game, while Deshaun Gorey didn't even make a field goal. And then from there on, he's been on fire just about until Saturday in Air Force. So I think the Bulldogs have grown a little bit from that game. I think the biggest factor, though, is if UNLV doesn't have Tyron Jones, who's currently listed as questionable, that's going to be a big loss for the Rebels, and I think that tips the scales in Fresno State's favor quite a bit if he doesn't go. He had 18 points against the Dogs last time around, and just a real energetic freshman that's tough to deal with. Him and Gorey have kind of brought similar energy, I think, to the court this year for their respective teams. So if they don't have him, we'll be waiting until about 6 o'clock today to see what the final call is for him or if it's a game-time decision. But that goes a long way. Still got to deal with a couple of Rebels that are still very solid players, but I think the Bulldogs would be in a pretty comfortable spot if they don't have to deal with Jones.
Well, there's no doubt the athleticism issue. And look, we've talked about it, Jackson. The Bulldogs going into the year, and I don't think it was an inaccurate statement, were thought to be a heady team, a team, you know, that would back cut you, a lot of experience from the international game, but not the most athletic team in the world. And two things really change that, or two individuals, and that would be Gorey and Stickman. Obviously, Stickman has had some health issues. And the fact that you're waiting to see what was going to happen with Douglas coming back, speaking of health issues. And the Bulldogs are more athletic now than I think we thought they were. But even with not UNLV's full strength lineup out there, are the Bulldogs still suffering from a sheer athleticism standpoint in this game?
I don't think overwhelmingly so, at least. I think UNLV, they do have an athletic team, but it's not quite the same issues that the Bulldogs saw against San Diego State or New Mexico, and surely not Arkansas. I think they've got enough of those games and reps under their belt where that they can deal with that. And Jones is probably the most athletic of them all, so that's a big difference whether he's out there or not.
The way the Bulldogs came back in Vegas, do you look at that and say that they figured something out, Jackson, or did UNLV just take it for granted they were going to blow the Bulldogs out? What is your attitude about that game right at the start of the conference year, end of December, as compared to what we're going to see now a little over a month later, month plus?
Yeah, I think they figured some things out there. I know Coach Wahlberg, especially reflecting on that game, feels like they gave it away. It's hard to look at the final score of 12 points and almost remember that how close it was with a few minutes left. But Bulldogs definitely had a shot there on the road. And maybe if that wasn't the opener, maybe if that game was played a little later on the year, would have been a little different for the Dogs. I think they've probably grown maybe more than the Rebels have at this point. UNLV's on a three-game losing streak, and they've been pretty hot and cold. Three losses that were preceded by three wins, including one at Utah State. So, you know, if they're at full strength and they play their A game, they can come in here into the St. Mark's Center and really put a tough one on the Bulldogs. But if they look like the team they've been the last couple of nights, and especially if they don't have Jones, this is one the Bulldogs might be able to get without having too close of a finish either.
Well, one of the things that happened, as you know, in that game in Vegas is not only did the Bulldogs come back in a big hurry from a 16-point deficit. And we've talked about this over and over again. If somebody is up 16, if the other team comes back, you want that other team to have to work like hell to get back into the game. And then usually they will then fall back a second time. And the question is, do you have enough gumption? Do you have enough time on the clock to come back a second time? When you let somebody basically erase the deficit in such a big hurry, it gives them plenty of time to emotionally and physically fall back and come right back at you. That's why the Bulldogs still had the lead with 8 minutes to go in the game. But more than anything else, other than the fact that UNLV was a much more athletic team than Fresno State down the stretch, the Rebels did something they don't do every night, Jackson. They made some threes late. I mean, is that something you don't expect to see here in town, the way they shot it in that last 4 or 5 minutes at the Thomas and Mack the first time around?
Yeah, that part's critical. And it's also, especially the Bulldogs didn't play very good defense, at least for 20 minutes at Air Force this last game. So I imagine that's been a quick turnaround, but I'm sure that's been pressed here by Coach Wahlberg over the last couple of days. I think also critical for the Bulldogs in that comeback was that David Douglas, who at that time hadn't done anything basically to that point of the season, came in and hit 4 threes, which definitely helped their chances to come back. And he had a nice game as well against Air Force over the weekend. And I think kind of the baseline of this team for me, it just feels like, is how much are they turning the ball over and how efficient are they shooting three-pointers? We've seen them have some really ugly turnover games and some really ugly three-point nights. And as long as those numbers are just kind of average, they seem to be in it. And if they're above average, this team really has a feeling that it's only kind of popped out a couple of times. So I think they fixed a lot of the turnover issues. That's been a lot better as of late, but the three-pointers are still hit and miss. So you just kind of cross your fingers and hope you've got Douglas or Foss or Hiebreder, one or two of those guys are on, and they can help cancel out anything the Rebels might do on that side.
Well, UNLV shot almost 40% from three, which is unusual for them. They're not that proficient normally. They're only 3 for 10 in the second half, but those three came late. The other thing is that Gibbs Lawhorn had 6 of 10, and 6 of overall the 9 threes they hit in that game. So, you know, he really hurt the Bulldogs with 28. We talked yesterday. Fresno State had 4 players, Jackson, in double figures in the game. And so if they get that kind of distribution, I would think they have a good shot. What does your gut tell you? Do you believe the Bulldogs will win tonight?
I do feel pretty good about it. You know, on paper, it's a 50-50 game, and it's one. It would be tough to fault them too much if they don't get over the hump and get it, but it's just also one of those games where if you're going to take a step, this is the kind of one you need to win, especially at home. And again, I think that road game at Wyoming is another one. Those two games can make a pretty big difference in this final 10-game stretch of whether you're going 500 or so in that stretch or kind of ending the year on the downside. So I think there's got to be some urgency there. I think they feel like this game and even at Nevada, I think it's going to be a lot tougher, but feel like they let those ones go earlier in the year and that they can try and get some get back here this week. But I think both teams at full strength, it can go either way. I think if the Rebels show up without Jones suited up, also with kind of the 3-game hangover, I really like the Bulldogs shot here to win by a couple of possessions. I think the toughest part is if it is a 50-50 type game, UNLV comes in healthy with Jones on the court. That's a scary proposition just because you know Gibbs Lawhorn's the best scorer on the court. And if it's a game that can go either way in the last minute, he's probably going to be the guy that scores a bucket to tip the scale. So you got to control things in the first 39 minutes, not turn it over too much, get some threes to fall, and hopefully, I don't like to say it in that manner, but if Jones isn't on the court, definitely gives the Bulldogs a different type of edge in this matchup.
Well, the one thing that we have discussed, and I think it is more than fair to question it going forward, the Bulldogs have had trouble closing the deal, mainly because the other team, more times than not, has known exactly where the ball belongs, and Fresno State is still trying to figure out, I think, who's supposed to take that big shot at the end. Right, we talked about Gorey potentially being the guy. It would appear, if you need a three, that Douglas is the guy you'd like to see with the ball in his hands. Hiebreder is probably the most savvy player out there. and Collins is the creator and the guy who has the ball in his hands, who is in a very capable scorer himself because he can beat people off the dribble. But Jackson, you can't, you know, that's that thing where too many options means you don't have an option. So if you're supposed to have a go-to guy, who is it right now?
Yeah, it would be nice to have an obvious answer. I think Coach Wahlberg's mind is probably Jake Heidbreder, and you know, it feels like there are certain situations where maybe he might not be the best guy. But I also think you're late in the game, you're probably in the bonus. If you're going to let him drive and take a layup, you know, there's two different chances maybe for him just to draw a foul, let alone maybe make the basket. So, and you know, if he gets to the line, it's just about automatic. So I think that's kind of where the mindset is right now. But you know, Gorey's got that unreal confidence, and Douglas is probably a guy you got to set up for the three, but if you can have him in the corner and the defense sags, maybe you get that shot as well. It's kind of a combination of those three, and maybe you can use Zion to facilitate that play, but you kind of want the ball to get out of his hands before that free throw or shot opportunity comes to be.
Yeah, with Jake, you know, we talk about the fact that he surprisingly missed those throws late and cost him a game early on in the season. And since then, he has been lights out at the line. He's shooting over 90% and just been extraordinary. So I would agree with you. If you can get the ball in his hands and get him in a position to score, he's the guy that you want to see at the line. The trouble is he is not the kind of guy who breaks people down one-on-one the way, say, Collins can. So we'll see if we're in that kind of game. It didn't get quite to that point. At Vegas, they pulled away in the last few minutes. Fresno State had a chance and obviously still had the lead, as we mentioned, with 8 minutes to go in the game. I know one thing's for sure, Faison, you don't want to go down 16 in the first half again and see if you can come back. I mean, been there, done that. Don't want to try that again. One final basketball question for you. As you broke down the rest of the schedule, and again, I think you feel, as I do, that the San Jose State game here and the Air Force game here, like the Air Force game last Saturday at Clune, those are not must-win games. They're must-not-lose games. You don't get a lot for beating those teams, but it's catastrophic if you lose them. I think those two are going to be W's, and I believe that Fresno State, try though they will not be able to win at Logan or at Phoenix. Phoenix, of course, against Grand Canyon. If you take that as a given that it's going to be a split of those four games, what do you honestly see beginning tonight with the rest of the conference schedule? Do you see the Bulldogs, as you reference, at around 500 the rest of the way, better than that or below that?
Yeah, well, that's where this game and the Wyoming game as well, I think it becomes critical. If you've got probably two wins you can count on right now in the last 10, which you never say never, but it feels pretty good right now on paper. And then if you can get UNLV and at Wyoming, which feel like about 50-50 games right now, that's four. Then you only need to steal one more the rest of the way to get to five. You need to get six wins to finish 500. I think that's a little bit of a tall ask, right? Because those other six games, they're all on paper pretty lopsided situations. Again, you mentioned at Utah State, at Grand Canyon. I don't think the Bulldogs have much of a shot on the road in those games. Most of the other ones as well, I think the Bulldogs will be fairly significant underdogs. You can make a case for a lot of them. At Nevada, you know, the Bulldogs kind of let that one go against Wolfpack at home, but at Nevada on the road, the way they're playing right now, I think they're going to be pretty significant underdogs. New Mexico at home is going to be tough. Boise at home is going to be tough. At Colorado State, they're going to be at full health, at least it looks like right now, compared to where they were in Fresno a couple of weeks back. That one's going to be tough. So I think versus UNLV and at Wyoming, those are two you really got to cash in on, and then see how many of the rest you can steal from that other group of games that are going to be tough ones to get.
Well, it's going to be worth watching because this team has shown improvement, whether it's enough improvement. Again, that's to be determined, and that's going to be in the court of a university president and an athletic director. You have made it clear on air, and I agree with you, that it would be a lot cleaner to just go through the 3 years and see where you're at. But again, like me, I don't think you're going to get the final say on this, Jackson. This is my hunch, but I do I do support and appreciate your point of view. I also want to mention that after the Bulldogs play the game, tonight and then at Nevada. Then they go to Logan the following Tuesday, a week from today. So, yeah, this would be a real good one to get tonight because you're going to have a real battle on both Saturday and Tuesday on the road. If you can get this one, and somehow if you get the one at Reno, then you put yourself in a good position going to Logan. Lose this one tonight, now possibility exists of losing three straight right out of the box after beating Air Force before you see the Falcons again back at home. We'll see. Again, 8 o'clock tonight, FS1. Hopefully you're going to be out there. I assume you're going to be threading your heart away, right?
Oh, I will be. And then it's time for bed and then wake up for signing day as early as I can the next morning.
Well, and again, Jackson and I will both be in Pat Hill's office waiting for the fax. Oh, wait a minute. That was a long time ago. I've told you, the nostalgia about the fax machine, it just was so great. If you stood in the coach's office and you knew there was a big recruit and you were waiting for that fax machine to chug that guy's commitment and you're all sitting there staring at a fax machine, that's a long, long time ago. And what do you now, beyond the technology being drastically improved, what do you derive meaning-wise now from what used to be the be-all, end-all? Boy, right, the first Wednesday in February, you can hardly wait. How do you feel about it now?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of action left. When they started the December signing day, it felt like it was going to kind of be a niche thing for players that wanted to enroll early or wanted to sign ahead of time, and it very quickly divulged into, you know, if you don't sign with us in December, you're not serious. You know, we're going to move on to the next guy. So it really became the date for recruits to sign. There's a few leftovers. I know when Coach Ince got here last year, after the first signing day, there was some priorities and some guys they brought in February. They got most of their class done ahead of time this year. So I'm not expecting maybe a surprise name or two shows up tomorrow, but otherwise, they got a lot done, and they signed a big class back in December, so they're in good shape there. They did add a walk-on commit, Silas Austin from Atwater, nearby, 6'6" athlete. Preferred walk-ons don't get announced on signing day, assuming that's going to be how he's coming in, so probably won't see anything official on him tomorrow, but I don't believe Fresno State has officially announced the transfer, so I think social media-wise, you'll probably see a lot of the transfer names show up and be announced as kind of signees, but they've basically all been here for a while, and maybe there's a transfer that's going under the radar that pops up, but yeah, otherwise both high school, junior college recruiting and the portal have kind of already hit the time where they're going to get most of their guys. I think we may see them take another lap around in the spring, maybe see if a high schooler got overlooked or if a junior college summer graduate is someone they want to bring on, but kind of on to 2027 already at this point.
Little Bill Belichick there. You're on the 2027. That's right. And too bad they're not playing Cincinnati, or we could say we're on the Cincinnati. You remember, never mind. I will tell you this, though. I can assure everybody, if there is breaking news, they will find it on the board, correct?
Absolutely. We'll be covering everything going on signing day, and if any new news comes up, we'll be sure to report it.
And I do want to ask you about any specials going on before I let you go here, Paizan. We'll talk again, of course, on Friday.
Yeah, for signing day, we've got an offer. You can join for just $1 on your first 2 months to give it a try. It's extended here for signing day to get some extra time in and keep it around for spring football, at least the start of it. And we've also got our annual subscription at 50% off for tomorrow. So you can also join in, lock in for the season. They're a little over $5 a month that way.
Well, it's well worth it. I hope people check it out. And as I've asked you over and over again, when you take the overview of the season just passed for football and where the Bulldogs are headed now, are you excited about what we're going to see? And I look, we've talked about over and over again with the Pac. I'm not making the Pac more than what it is. What it is a much better conference than the Bulldogs are leaving right now. Now, part of that is because they're leaving with the rest of the group, but to be left behind would have been catastrophic. You and I have discussed the fact that what the conference does from here on, from 8 to ultimately at least 12 and maybe beyond, that's going to determine how viable the pack is. It's never going to be, or at least it's not going to be in the foreseeable future, anything near what the original pack 8, 10, and 12 was, because the whole dynamic was different. But just taken for what it is right now, Jackson, and where the Bulldogs could have been if they wouldn't have been chosen to move forward, how excited slash relieved are you that at least Fresno State is still in the game? They are not being left, again, as Mike Tyson would say, in Bolivian. Okay, I mean, are you happy or relieved or a combination of the two that this is not a team that's remaining in the Mountain West as it sinks very slowly in the Pacific? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's massive that the Bulldogs weren't left behind. I think there's going to be a pretty decent disparity between the monies that are coming in from those two conferences. I'm not sure if Pac-12 is going to get quite as much as they had intended, but it is going to be quite a gap, and I think it's going to start to show over the course of the upcoming seasons. You know, give it 3, 4, or 5 years, and I think you'll start to see a little more separation with the rosters, even just based off the recruiting and the transfers. You look at the offers that players are deciding between, and you can see there's a bit of a tier there for a lot of them. I think just in the short term, you know, it's exciting. You go from year one to year two with Coach Entz. That's always a promising figure when your first year was 9 wins. You can imagine it could get better. They have a lot of seniors to replace, but a big freshman class coming in to build for the future, and couple of those seniors got extra eligibility, which lessens the blow a little bit. I like the transfer class. I think they've plugged quite a few of the holes that they had remaining from the seniors that left. Didn't lose many players from the portal. And then you mix in, you know, the separation of the pack in the Mountain West with the fact that there's not a lot of Pac-12 teams that are particularly, you know, full steam ahead right now as far as the way they're trending. Oregon State and Washington State are kind of starting over this offseason. Even San Diego State lost a lot of its defense after a breakout year. Boise State had some pieces that they lost. I mean, the Broncos, obviously, 3 Mountain West championships in a row, but it doesn't feel like the same type of Boise State that it was in the past. So, you know, you wondered exactly where Fresno State would fit in to the pack when the conference was kind of announced what it was going to be. And so I think the Bulldogs have as much momentum right now as possible. Short term, you feel really good. Long term, you got to make sure you've got the NIL to make sure you don't slide back at all.
Well, again, just looking forward to the viability and trying not to think about what could have happened if the Bulldogs would have been left behind. It didn't happen. We know the crazy machinations of the Big 12 and all of that, and who knows what we're going to face in the 2030s, and we're not that far away, but right now it looks pretty good going forward, so I look forward to it next year, as do you as well. Jackson, appreciate it. Enjoy one tonight. Have a great threading night. Hopefully the Bulldogs win. I'll talk to you about it on Friday. I hope people sign up on the board. No question about it. Take care, my friend.
All right, you too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, de facto host Jackson Moore. We'll take a break. Come back, tell you about the schedule, hand it off to Phil. I think he's in San Francisco. There's a lot of stuff going on in Santa Clara, a lot of stuff at the convention center in San Jose, and then Radio Row, I think from what Jorge told me, they're actually in downtown San Francisco, which is always a lot of fun trying to get in and out of in any given day. We'll get it to Phil after this. Take the break, tell you about the schedule, then Phil, then it is the look of the 2020s, 2030s, 2040s, the Pro Bowl games coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Get excited about it. Back with more as the Bulldog Hour continues on this Tuesday on Central Valley Sports Leader, 1430 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. Couple of stone show handed off to Phillies at Radio Row in San Francisco for Super Bowl week. And he will lead us up to the Super Bowl for us on Sunday from Westwood One. They'll kick it off at Levi's just after 3:30. Of course, the game is on NBC as well. I'll tell you all about the schedule for today in just a moment, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering. Planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. For more information, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net. And we mention this every day. Ed has done such a great job fundraising for this valley and for his alma mater, Fresno State through the Lyles College of Engineering there on campus. The goal is always to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully, and a lot of those grads from the Lyles College of Engineering go to work for Ed at Precision Civil Engineering, a company that does such terrific work throughout the valley. As far as what we're looking at tonight, the Pro Bowl games, and I'm being sarcastic when I say it's what we're going to see for the 20s, 30s, and 40s, maybe that might be true, because they're trying to find a way to make it entertaining without the specter of injury or guys bailing out. It'll be a lot of the skills competitions again, and then the 7-on-7 flag football games, which, you know, we're seeing the Olympics now embrace flag football, etc. So maybe it will catch on, but that will be coming up at 4:30 today, the radio version, TV at ESPN at 5 o'clock. So stay tuned for that. Also on our sister station, the Deuce 790, of course, all of this on 1430. On 790 at 4:15, the Lakers finally finished this long, torturous road trip in Brooklyn against the Nets. Grammys, of course, have had the crypt, the old Staples Center, because of festivities that finally ended Sunday with the Grammy presentation. So the Lakers get to get back to their home facility later in the week. As a matter of fact, we talked about Paul George not being able to play because of the suspension. Philly won last night at Intuit Dome against the Clippers. They're in the Bay Area tonight at Chase Center to play the Warriors. And then on Thursday, the Lakers are back home. And again, they will host the Sixers. I bring it up because Paul George would have loved to have played in all three games, particularly as well as the Sixers are playing. But Paul will be sitting for this 25-game suspension that cost him $12 million of his salary. So that's a very big chunk, even for a guy who is as well-heeled financially as Paul George is. I know from a competitive standpoint, it's driving him crazy right now. It was an inadvertent mistake about that medicine for his anxiety, and an unfortunate deal. At least it didn't happen during the playoffs. That's all I can tell you. Later in the week, we have more Lakers and Sharks games. And, of course, as I mentioned, the Super Bowl wraps things up on Sunday, and we're then done with the NFL season until next summer, when we come back with the 49ers, Raiders, and Rams, and the Raiders figure to have Fernando Mendoza as their quarterback at that point, if Tom Brady has anything to say about it. By the way, to Gino and Visalia, Gino, I watched the first two episodes of Tom Brady's, I know he's not the one who produced it, but he's part of it, about his beloved 49ers of the 80s. And it was interesting, but for those of us that lived through it, a lot of it is comparing apples to oranges, as you mentioned. They're trying to equate everything with the city in lockstep with the 49ers, and that wasn't necessarily true in the 70s and 80s. Some of it was, but a lot of it was poetic license. We'll see what the ensuing episodes are like on AMC Plus. I wish they could have gotten a better format for it as far as distribution, but I will tell you this. If you watch it closely, you can see the fade to black a lot. That is because that's where they've set this up to go onto a commercial network like ESPN, etc. in the future. So you can bet it's going to go more places than just AMC Plus. But I was entertained by it, but not particularly overwhelmed by it, let's put it that way. The final reminder is here. Phil normally 3 to 6 Monday through Friday. Mentioned he's on Radio Row right now for the week, including Thursdays at Fashion Furniture with his fine show Behind the Bench. Again, El Paso across from River Park. The great special still going on at Fashion Furniture. Always the best furniture on the planet. Nothing like it in all of California. Good eats when Phil is there. And as always, you can give him a call on the Lee's Air hotline, 559-320-1430. Stop on in. Fashion Furniture. Say hello to Rod Avedikian, who does so much to help the Valley with everything sporting-wise. And check out the best furniture you're going to find anywhere. Also, Phil 3 to 6 on Thursday. On Saturday mornings, Paul Metters has his great show from First String Sports, 10 a.m. to noon. That's Central Valley Sports Report. He also has the fine show on Wednesday evenings on 790, our sister station, the Deuce. That's the Sunbird Sports Show, all about Fresno Pacific Athletics. We're with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, tdad1 at att.net, tdad, the number 1 at att.net. First names are fine. And then finally, everything for the station, 1430 ESPN Fresno.com. You find the live links and podcasts there. We're back with Jack Ferdy tomorrow to talk about the Bulldog game tonight. Again, 8 o'clock, Save Art Center. If you can't make it, it's on FS1. We will discuss it tomorrow. Thanks again to Jorge. Thanks to Jackson. Phil is coming up from San Francisco. See you tomorrow on KFIG Fresno.